Welcome back. Thank you once again for hanging out with us. This is the one and only IT and the D show. I am your host, Bob Walton-Spiel, alongside co-host, producer extraordinaire, Randy Walker. Guest this week, Brian Schneebly, a.k.a. Schneebs. You know him. It's a two-part series he was on a couple of weeks ago, talking about life on in his side of the world. Tonight, we're getting into, this should be a fun topic, exiting VMware. I'm going to be bold and say that statement, getting rid of VMware. And Brian seems to have done a ton of research. We're talking about how data is the new oil. I think that's a fascinating story as well. But you can find us online at itandd.com. Do us a favor. Give us a like on the socials. Subscribe to us everywhere. Fine podcasts are sold. Don't forget meetup.com/itandd. Third Thursday every month, 5 o'clock. I think we might be going Nancy Whiskey patio for the next few months while the weather's still good. I'll be posting that on Meetup and on LinkedIn, so be sure to keep your eyes out.
But for this month, we are still at Eastern Palace Club for May 16th.
We are at Eastern Palace Club. So after that, we'll look at spending the summer outdoors. So keep on the lookout, meetup.com/IT in the D. Brian, how the heck are you, buddy? Good to see you again.
Good. Welcome to be back. And actually, I think this is a great carryover because last time we were talking about pig slaughtering. And this is like a new example of pig slaughtering just being done by the actual companies themselves.
So I had to get like 17 different ways to confirm this. So like VMware has been around as long as Microsoft's been around in our lives. Like it's been the backbone of pretty much everything we've ever done in IT. It's kind of always been there. It's a Cisco, Microsoft, you know, VMware. That's like their staples. Dell buys it, leaves it alone. Life is good, right? Broadcom, who's in this, you know, came out of nowhere just to start acquiring everybody, buys VMware. Nobody knows if it's good, bad, different, or anything. And then we realized, they are literally increasing our licensing between 3 and 8x. Let me say that again, 3 times to 8 times what it used to be. And everyone's
looking. Actually, I go out on a limb and say, depending if you're a really small company, like a small MSSP,
yeah,
like 200 times.
So let's take a huge mother may I step back and like, do you like, I don't know. Does anyone know, is this the why? Are they just saying, hey, I've heard companies already say like the 80-20 rule, right? Where is, you know, 80% of their companies are small business and giving them 80% of the problems, right? Or 20, you know what I mean? But it's 20% of the revenue. So they're like, all right, let's just get rid of the small business. It's only 20% that's causing 80% of our problems. Is it that scenario or what? Because all I'm hearing is the small guys getting rear-ended out of this.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like it's when you look at the world of like colo, data center, et cetera, and you have a ton of different MSSPs out there that have supported clients for years. But they're not, I mean, they're not Microsoft, right? Like in terms of these behemoths.
Yeah.
But they've supported their customers, and part of that was VMware, and with VMware came the VMware stack, and it worked really well. And you were able to give your customer a few different options. When vSphere came out, everybody loved it.
Yeah.
Now what you have, and I think was it October or September that Broadcom officially closed. It was November 22nd. Broadcom officially purchased VMware. In the months leading up to it, people began to speculate that I don't think this is going to be good for anybody using VMware, right? And people are like, well, how bad could it be, right? Like when they took over Symantec, I think that was a good showing or foreshadowing of what could happen.
Brian, Symantec was dead though 5 years prior to that acquisition. I'm just saying.
True. Yeah. From an antivirus standpoint, but
right.
When they bought it, the first thing they did was they turned around and said, we're only going to support like what? Like, don't quote me on this. Like our 200 largest customers. The rest of you, we're not concerned with.
Go to Kaspersky.
Right. Which was a kind of bold statement, but that was the first signs of how they were going to work in the channel program. And with this, it's another form of pig slaughter. I don't know.
So let me drop the bomb, Brian, and then we can dive into each one of these. Here's the four pillars of doom, I'm going to call it. So they're discontinuing selling perpetual licenses. They're shifting to software only subscription. Well, let's dive into it, but I'm going to tease this one saying Adobe moved to that model, Microsoft moved to that model. Nobody's pissed, right? So I'm going to play devil's advocate on a few of these things. I don't want to be just like VMware's or Broadcom's the devil. Broadcom announced end availability for many standalone products and consolidated only to 4 product bundles. Third one is they're terminating many of their existing partnerships. I don't know if that's VAR or ISV or any of the above. And here's one that's kind of a big pillar. They're transitioning from per processor to per core with a minimum of 16 cores per CPU. So if you have fewer than 16 cores, you're paying for it. Doesn't matter. Two CPUs.
Yeah, and from the CPU standpoint.
Two CPUs, 8 cores, you're paying for 32 cores because you have two CPUs. That's the nuke.
Yeah, that's the nuke that they drop down on people. But even from the CPU side, so they say the minimum cores per CPU, and then they have a minimum CPU count that they went back to a lot of these guys with. So here's the difference when you said Microsoft, Adobe, et cetera, when they changed their partner program. What they did was they didn't say we're getting rid of a VAR, we're getting rid of, you know, VARs or TSDs, et cetera. What they said were, we're going to look at all these partners. And if you were a mom and pop that was a partner of ours, or you were a data center that was running us, but you're a small data center, or you were just, let's say you were just Midwest, you weren't Equinox, right? Yeah. Like, we're just going to look at our top 200 or top 1,000 and say, guess what? The rest of you, sorry. And that's what they did. And they came back, and then, so there was people since November saying, when they heard about the whole partner program, saying, oh man, what's going to happen to my pricing? And I talked to even a local CIO right nearby.
Sure, sure.
When VMware came up, and I was like, he goes, yeah, he goes, but I think I'm okay. He goes, my partner. And I go, who's your partner? And he told me, and I go, they said they're okay, but they can't get you pricing yet. And he goes, yeah, he goes, I have a renewal like in a month. He goes, and I've been waiting. He goes, and they said it could still be a few weeks. So you're telling me that you're going to find out your new pricing like a week before your renewal. So what you're basically saying is you're going to take one on the chin for X amount of time. And what are you going to do? So if you're going to replace your hypervisor, yeah, you could go to Nutanix. You're going to be maybe looking further down the road after that. But for some of these guys that are local data, I won't even call a local data center, Midwest data center, and now they just change your minimums, right? That you got to be here. Some of these guys saw their monthly bill go from like $76,000, $100,000 a month up to $1 million a month.
Good God.
So if you're a small business, you can't take that on the chin.
No.
Right?
No.
So internally, you're looking, you can't go back to your customers and say, hey guys, hate to tell you this, but your price is going up 100x or 20x.
And I'm looking right now at just numbers to migrate. If you want, let's say, we'll get into the options in a minute, but they're averaging 6 to 18 months average time needed to exit and to move into the cloud. That's just for the cloud. I mean, granted, it might be different if you move to. So let's get into the what the hell's your options to move. So I just said the cloud, that's one. Nutanix, that's two. And there's different flavors of Nutanix, right? So I know that we got a local guy, Verge. There's a few other ones, you know, that type of player. I guess
So Nutanix isn't necessarily getting you 100% away from VMware. It's like, okay, we're going to change our hypervisor, but what part of VMware am I still attached to?
So right? Explain this to me. I understand Nutanix as a layer, a hybrid IT software platform that lets you drop workloads into any environment, whether it be cloud, on-prem, off-prem. In between. I know it's deeper than that, but just as a dumb sales guy, that's my understanding of it.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not going to go too into the weeds on all those, yeah, right? Yeah. So like, because you mentioned Verge as well. Verge would be, do I want to change my hypervisor, but then also change how I do network, compute, and storage, right? So now you do have a true path to say, because I look at what are my VMware alternatives? Well, yeah. The alternative
Hyper-V
is to find somebody else that is one of the 200 or 1,000 partners that I can go get it, because we got people knocking on our door all day long at GTS like, hey, we can help with VMware. We got an alternative, right? And when I hear the word alternative, I'm thinking, yeah, okay, what's this new product? And they're like, They're like, we are the alternative because we got this new special price from VMware. Stop. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, so you're the golden boy, and then you're a golden boy. Yeah. Oh, you're a platinum boy. So everyone that was now thinks they're someone and was able to negotiate a VMware contract is running around trying to steal everybody else who just got. So when I was saying that data, the new oil, this is like very similar to that, like Standard Oil, when they created their trust and their rebates that they were working out with the railroad industry and then building their own pipelines. Broadcom looked at this and said, what does the future look like, right? If the future is this AI and all these large language models and these massive compute, right? You need massive amounts of compute. It's like, huh, VMware's got a great product. All we got to do is take over them, get rid of all the partners, increase our pricing, and compute's coming with it. Like, look what the future looks like. We're just going to charge everybody to death. Premiums, like Standard Oil monopoly on not the oil, on the refining business, right? And then the transportation business, on the railroad and everything else. That's basically what VMware has done here. And it's like, okay, go somewhere else. Are you going to be happy on Nutanix with the hypervisor? You're still going to be dependent on these other three or four things that just came along for the ride with VMware.
Wow. I want to get in the oil thing a minute, but like I think we're still tackling on like options. Like Google Cloud has a product too. I'm not pitching anything here, but I'm just, they have a VMware engine and sitting in their cloud, and I know nothing about it. 0.0.
So in the 2 minutes I looked over and I was like, huh, this is why I brought up the whole data is the new oil Standard Oil Rockefeller Trust. This is one of those where it's like, if I'm VMware, I can make Google one of my partners and start pointing people in their direction, migrating people to the cloud. Google's going to promise to throw them all on VMware. It's the whole rebate thing done all over again. Like, this is why they broke up Standard Oil. At the end of the day, it wasn't the oil. It was controlling the refining of it. Everybody creates data all day long. It's not hard to go find data. People are pumping it out.
Yeah.
It's the idea of now who's in control of refining it. Where do you store your barrels? Who's shipping your barrels? That's literally taken over like the old Standard Oil Monopoly Trust.
Brian, when I found out about Google Cloud, they said Broadcom is helping their customers move into there. And I go, what? Why? Like, to me, it would be like, I guess because they still get the light, they still get the transport. You know, you just summed it up perfectly. Like, they still get to truck it, transport it, store it, bring it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they probably went to Google because Google's motto was don't be evil.
Not anymore. We hope it's somewhere buried in the T's and C's, but I think, didn't they drop it like 4 or 5 years ago? I don't, Randy, you might know.
I think it was longer than that.
It's been a while now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, when I look at the VMware situation, and this is why, so as alternatives, when we were saying, what's an alternative?
Yeah.
Well, an alternative isn't just changing who your partner is just so you can go get your license. That's like, yes, it's an alternative to your current partner. It's not an alternative to VMware. You're just changing who you're buying from, right? And your rate's still changing and going up some.
That's a pretty big, could you imagine? I'm just thinking out loud, like Microsoft didn't do that. Like they just said, we're going to a subscription model and it was actually beneficial. Like I didn't hear anybody belly aching when Adobe, when Adobe did it either.
The people that are belly aching are the partners because they're like, now there's so many partners selling Microsoft. The margins are slim, right? Like if you want to go get Microsoft licensing, there's no one's hiding it. Right.
Yeah.
And everyone's pretty transparent about it. If you want to go get VMware, it's like, well, guys, the state of Michigan no longer carries it. If you want to, well, actually, it's more like, take that back. It's more like Wisconsin. Sorry, guys, if you want to go get your marijuana, you got to drive up to the border of Michigan.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to go get your VMware, go ahead and get into a truck. You're going to have to drive 10x further to go get it.
All the Chicago guns come from Indiana. I get it. I get it. You know, yeah, make it illegal. Yeah.
But and to pivot there, when you said alternative, there are, though, and I think there's literally maybe just two full blown alternatives to say, here's alternatives to go purchase it. Here's alternatives to get off of it. And I really do think Verge is one of those alternatives. The only thing they lack is backups. So like, yeah, they have disaster recovery, but that's not necessarily backups.
Right.
And that's a big piece of what data centers do, right? And MSSPs do. But at the end of the day, if you change the philosophy on how you do network compute and storage, moving to something like a Verge makes a lot of sense from the idea of like, can I go from 2 to 200 cores, 2 to 2000? Yeah, you can scale back and forth quite easily. I just think it's one of those things that when I say immature, the audience is immature to it because everyone's been doing it one way, literally one way for so long.
So now like the cloud, I don't want to say it doesn't scare me because I've been selling, you know, I've been in the cloud for 24, 5 years, whatever. I'm just worried about the bill, right? Because I'm a self-professed hybrid IT purist, right? Put the workload where it makes the most sense. If it's here or if it's in colo or if it's in the cloud, just depending on the math, this is a math problem. This should be no more or less than a math problem, right? But
I think if companies are looking at how they do dev, right? Like, yeah, you can do your pre-production in the cloud. A lot of companies are looking at it from a hybrid standpoint.
Sure.
And then I run my production on-prem. Find one person in your camp that's young, that isn't 100% 20 years on VMware, so that's all they know, and take that one person and say, hey, go find me a different way to do this. You know what? Buck the system. We're going to do it different.
But here's the why though. Like we're going to put prod local and we're going to put why. Like I want to know why. I need to know the math. Like what's getting hammered? How long is this thing going to be running for? All the standard cloud questions, right? Is this thing, do we need elasticity? Does this thing going to get hammered? Is this thing on 24/7? Is it on 1 hour a day? Right. All your basic, you know, is this cloud ready or is it not? Questions need to, and especially with something like VMware, like what are you putting through those servers that, you know, what's getting hammered, what's not? We might have to break this. This might be way more work than anticipated because now we're breaking down the workloads. We're not just breaking out the virtual machines. We're like, what's happening on each virtual machine and each workload? And now we're getting this thing just, we got the sniper rifle out and the buckshot worked just fine 2 years ago.
This is why I literally think the idea of Verge, right, makes the most sense when you look at compute power and the idea of scaling, right? In the future, when you're talking like large language model, if you're going to run an AI project and give one to your purchasing team, one to your marketing team, et cetera, like, what are you going to run through it? Like you said, what's the elasticity? What's our ability to scale this up, right? Volume wise. And we're going to need a massive amount of compute as we keep pumping our data into it. When you look at just the pricing in general today on VMware and where it's going, it's like, man, if I look at what the future is in compute and what I'm going to need, for one, I got my energy bill.
Right.
Right. And two, now I got my VMware bill. Like, I really think there's going to be a fundamental shift in philosophy. Like right now, people are scrambling to say, at the very least, yeah, now you can save me 50% on a hypervisor, I might switch. Or actually, that would be maybe like 2 years ago. Today, it's, you can save me 20x?
Right.
Yeah, I'm willing to switch, and now I'm willing to do things differently.
I'm laughing at the marketing terms, because like data lake, what was that? 8, 9, 10 years ago, we first heard of data lake. What is it? Just you dump all your shit into here. It's central repository. You know, then there was companies that sprouted up to manage that. Okay, cool. And now like there's data lake house. Brian, I couldn't tell you with a straight face what the hell a data lake. I've had people explain it to me like now there's a data lake house. Now we're going to have data lake boats. Like, are we going to have pontoons? Like,
I saw that and I just thought it was a cool marketing term for, hey, we're going to throw a party at a data lake house, like a house, and talk about data lakes. I'm like, oh, cool marketing term.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a house on a lake.
Yeah. Oh, it's a means, a way to control your data. Oh, it's a place where, you know what I'm saying? Like, again,
back to the data oil, right? It wasn't like when people think about Standard Oil, like on the surface, they're like, oh, he was an oil tycoon. No.
Ryan, nobody knows that story. Like, even I don't even know that story. So when you're dropping that stuff, I'm completely clueless to it. So like, let's get simple on this, because I'm totally intrigued by this story.
It literally, the book is massive. It's a 36-hour listen too, called Titan on John D. Rockefeller. But what people miss, like, think about one of the most powerful people in the world, one of the richest men in the world, right?
In history.
And everyone said that it was from oil. Yet the oil helped create the kerosene, the lubricants, the rubbers. Like, he had a monopoly on all the things that were production. He didn't, like, the oil wells themselves, it was the refineries that he took over and owned, not the oil wells. The oil wells would pop up and he would squeeze them by making sure nobody else could refine the material. And if you open up a refinery, he had what was called, not kickbacks, they were rebates with the railroad industry. And what you won't believe is it was all based off trust. All the rebates, there was nothing written down on paper. And they can find old notes where he would literally talk about, it's better to have a verbal agreement than it is on paper should this ever come back to haunt us. Right?
Wow.
And everybody agreed. And if somebody didn't pay their rebate, I mean, he could move mountains, right? And the railroads were all at each other's throat. Like, we're going to go bankrupt because of Standard Oil. And then when someone started building pipelines, he was like, huh. So then he squeezed them and then he started creating pipelines. So if anybody found oil and that started shooting into the air and refineries went up, good luck getting it to market. Good luck getting it to market. And that was the squeeze.
Wow.
So he owned the rights to all the kerosene. At one point, I mean, it was like over 65-75% of the world's kerosene was coming from Standard Oil, who had the monopoly to get it to all the ports on the East Coast, right? And the rest is kind of history. When people say oil, data is the new oil, yeah, it is. It's plentiful. It was everywhere. But the guys who make the most money are the ones who refine it and create these trusts. So the companies that are looking, like, why is everyone so afraid of OpenAI, Bob? When they said they wanted to be a not-for-profit so everybody could have access to it. If you're Microsoft, Google, and everyone else, you're like, no fucking way. You're going to take our oil and refine it so that everybody can be successful and have a product? No.
But I also believe,
why would you do that?
Data is not ubiquitous, though. Data is unique, and there's intellectual property. I mean, I get the correlation, but I'm just looking at it from, I'm trying to be objective here, right? Work with me.
But what's the objective? The objective is, put all your data into my cloud. And then, oh, by the way, we have something called Copilot now. No, we have Gemini over here. No, we have Mother Teresa, and we'll refine your data. We'll create AI for you. But the whole idea of OpenAI and some of the things that people are creating is data is the oil, meaning now you have to refine it. You don't just put oil in your car. That's not the oil that comes out of the ground, the crude. You don't put oil in your gas tank. It's refined into something, right? And which is pretty sad now with how bad gas is today. Like, you should be doing better refining that crap. But anyhow, the OpenAIs, right, the co-pilots, et cetera, everybody wants a chance to show you what you can do with your data, structured, unstructured, right? There's data security posture management. There's data discovery tools. There's data loss prevention. But it's all about how to then take the data and find value in it, right? That's what they were doing back then. All these byproducts, like, you look at gasoline as a byproduct that they hated. They were just dumping it down rivers. And then when they found you could use it for the combustion engine, boom!
Brian,
that's like the combustion engine is the AI.
Brian, there's a company out that's going to companies that, you know, name brands, and basically saying, I have a data marketplace and you're taking all of your nondescript data, what is that, metadata, and they're packaging it up and offering it to the open marketplace. So, I mean, this is going on right now. There's a reason why when you move into a house or buy something that all of a sudden you get 73 phone calls from AT&T and every mailer known to man from every pizza joint. They're like, well, how the hell did I get on it? They sold you. Like, we've been sold more times than I think any of us want to comprehend. If we broke it down, we'd probably all cry ourselves to sleep tonight.
Yeah. And again, with the AI revolution, this is where I see compute power. Like, if you're Broadcom, you're like, man, now AI is coming and everyone needs compute and everyone's, here we go.
Yeah. Did you see there's an, I'm totally squirreling, but it's still stupid. There's an app that you can, it, like, it's free for like four or five celebrities. I think like Trump, Biden, like, I don't know who else, but then it opens up to like 70 celebrities and you could type a message and send it. And you basically package it up in email and it sounds just like them. You don't
see, I love when you say like Trump, Biden, like who comes next? The Golden Girls?
Like, those are the ones that were free, right? God, and it's gonna drive me nuts. Randy's probably have to edit this out because I'm gonna have to look it up now. But
no, I mean I've never heard of that, but
wait till they do it to you. That's, you know.
It reminds me of the app where you can go ahead and get like one of the famous actors to sing happy birthday for your buddy, right? Yeah. Like some are $100, right? For like Captain Bluey or whoever. And then somebody else like Tom Cruise might be like $500, right? To say happy birthday and put a few punchlines. And I'll be honest, like some of those are not Tom Cruise. It's someone who looks really much like Tom Cruise.
There was, it's getting, well, you could still tell there's error, like in the mouth movement. It's not perfect, but the voice is, uncanny, which is, there's a little bit of a hesitation, but you're like, what, like this, is this real? Is this not? And again, like Brian, how many years have you been podcasting? I've been podcasting for 10. They can pretty much get me to say anything you want. Granted, nobody really cares. Brian, wait, hold on. We got a call coming in. It looks like it's
Brian Schneebly is a total idiot fool. He knows nothing about VMware.
Yes. And there it is. I'm going to do it again. Hold on. I'm going to do it again. That was good. Hold on.
Brian Schneebly is a total idiot fool. He knows nothing about VMware.
All right.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's Parrot AI. Try parrotai.com.
I'm doing that now. I'm going to be sending these to like Eric and Dan.
I'll just leave voicemails for people.
And one last thing too, not to switch back to the VMware. So I got like an update just because I had VMware stuff open. The European Union is launching a probe into VMware's tactics and what they're doing to all their partners, right? It's the Europeans that are like, well, this is wrong.
All right, Brian, one more call coming in real quick, and then we'll head back to. It's going to take a second. I'm sorry. The call, I need to answer it. Oh, now it's telling me 30 seconds. God bless. All right, never mind. I'm an idiot. the European Union, sorry.
Yeah, the European Union launched a probe, and we'll see what comes out of it. They have a whole commission going after the VMware tactics, which is telling because if you limit the number of partners you have, right, and you did that across Europe as well, now there's probably some countries that got the short end of the stick because they had smaller data centers and businesses, and now they're being forced to go buy from their neighbor, right, like Spain being told to go buy from France or France right. being told to go buy from Germany or vice, or maybe the biggest data centers were over near like the Eastern Bloc, right? So now you're being forced to go over to the East. Who knows?
So no,
I just look at that and think.
So with Cisco, they did it quietly. While I was there, you wanted to be in the top 20 partners. Then you got the love. If you weren't in the top 20, You were junk. You were garbage. Just go buy from CDW if you want to resell our stuff. And I'm not even going to answer your call. So what they would do is there's three companies in this state that one bought one bought the other, then they bought another, and they became in the top 20 through four or five acquisitions and got on the list. And now they get all the love. So it's funny how certain companies do this in different ways. Like Cisco didn't get any trouble for that because it was pretty much unwritten. Like Broadcom pretty much put a billboard on 75 like and dropped it. Hang on, we got one more phone call coming in.
The IT and the D show is complete garbage. Worst podcast on the internets.
There. You'll have fun with it for about an hour and a half and then you're like, all right, I'm done.
I'm going to be sending these to Kelly as well.
I think you got like 400 or 500 characters, so you could pretty much say whatever. But for him to pronounce IT and the D, I couldn't even get celebrities to do that in person. Like IT and the D, IT and the D. Like what? Like AI Biden.
I love the Trump one though. Brian Schneebly's a complete moron. That guy's an idiot. He doesn't know crap about VMware. Like,
true story.
Might be a lot of truth.
I'll email you the clips so you can, in case we get hate mail from VMware reps.
And maybe the last thing I say here is there was a VMware rep, some VP, and if you're listening to this, I'm Brian. Feel free to pick up the phone and call.
Yeah, I'm Bob. Phone's on too.
he put a post out there like, there's a work. Lot of people.
Hashtag open for work.
There's a lot of people. No, he was like, there's a lot of people out there slamming VMware. He's like, but we've done so much good, right? And like, it was like this whole, people are misunderstanding, right? And it's great to see some of our partners talk about how much help we're providing or some BS like that. And I replied back and I was like, hey, well, I appreciate the message that you just put on LinkedIn. Probably not the time or the place, considering that you guys are forcing small businesses and entrepreneurs into bankruptcy. Like, so while you sit here and pat yourself on the back for, some of these partners, I go, you just got rid of, 7/8 of them, and you're killing small businesses across the U.S.
Right? Do the math. If it takes 6 to 18 months to migrate off and you're a small business, you get a 4x bill, even if you're paying 25 grand and now it's 100. Most of these small
businesses. He got my post removed and he got me kicked off. Stop. I wasn't allowed to come back and comment. Stop. I'm like, what? Like I Bill or guys, this wasn't me going nuts, right? Like I normally did. I just thought it was a nice tasteful note I put back. Like, you're killing small businesses, so be careful with what you say. Right. And you couldn't stomach that?
Brian, good thing that you don't have my temperament here. You just yell. I would have published it everywhere. Like, this guy deleted my comment. He cares nothing about small business. Like, he needs to be de-pantsed. No, I mean, I think you can still call. I would call him out publicly. It was always a IT and the D rule that you never call out someone publicly first time. But you do something twice, like I'm pulling your pants down in front of the gym class. Like, it's just, it's on. You don't get to police.
Like, I just thought it was poor taste. Like, you don't have to put something on LinkedIn there, patting your company on the back because you're trying to defend them on LinkedIn, right? Knowing
even like a Coney Island manager is going to say, hey, listen, I'd love to have a talk with you. Come on and have a cup of coffee. Let's talk through this because maybe you got your information miswired. You know what I'm saying? Like something like that. Like now he just put gas on that fire. Like that. Oh boy. I'm going to have a fun couple of days. I'm going to dial in on this. This is going to be good. So.
And I could probably go back and find the post because I knew I took a picture of it and sent it to like two people.
Was it in a group?
And then 2 minutes later, they reply back. They're like, hey, Brian, I can't find it. Cause I was like, hey guys, make sure to go like this, right? To get a little traction. Yeah.
Was it in a group?
No, it's just some guy that put a post up and there was maybe like 10 comments and I came out over the top. And next thing you know, my comment was removed and I was blocked from looking him up. And I was like, cause I wanted to send him a message like, hey man, like seriously, why would you do that?
Wow. This is, yeah, that's,
And Bob, for the record, before I put my comments on there,
yeah.
I made sure to go through the profile first to see what type of person I was dealing with, right? Sure. So here you are making those comments, but I can see pictures of you where you got like your no socks on and your nice whatever Ferragamo shoes. You got your shirt unbuttoned to here at whatever President's Club you're at and everything else. Don't post that shit on LinkedIn. It's not meant for it, okay? So then to go say all the good you guys are doing, you don't care about the little man. You never did. And you're the guy doing it. So like when I put that, I could have called out all those things. Did not. Simple fact that you're hurting small business.
Brian, the little guys don't give him the doors in his car that go like this. You know, they don't open regular. They go like this. You know, little Silicon Valley here. These are not the doors of a billionaire, Richard. I'm just saying, like someone, someone who's in the insurance industry and did a fault casualty check, and they did an actuary study on what's it. So like when I got laid off from Cisco, not that I'm bitter or anything, but they did a study that if they hired, let's say, a 26-year-old out of college, they would lose 17% in productivity over having a seasoned vet. So they said, let's do it. That's what it's worth to us. So somebody at VMware did that study, said, if we get rid of these, you know, bottom 80% of our customers and focused on our top 20%, we're going to lose 15% of our business maybe over the first 2 years. Then we're going to make up for it because they're going to pay all that extra money because they're locked in. It's what it smells like to me. If I'm wrong, call me an idiot, but that's layman guy looking mile high view. That's what it looks like to me.
Yeah. And you cut out a lot of the fat in terms of
support costs,
you know,
internal
cost of doing business, having to support all these partners and so forth. But at the end of the day, you're not actually helping small businesses. Like the whole idea of how to support small business and community. Anyhow, I think next time we get on, I was just listening to, it was like a TED talk, but it was about like how we're killing our youth and from an education standpoint. And part of this goes into the idea of when we're talking about business, small business, but large business, and talking about large universities and endowments, right? And he goes, listen, if you increased your endowment size by 450%, and he's specifically talking about Harvard, but you only increased your enrollment by a few percent, then I'm sorry, you got to lose your tax-free exempt status because you're now a hedge fund for the rich.
What's their endowment these days? Is it $100 billion or yet? Is it close? I bet you
that's close. A great question.
The fact that you're charging, I know somebody that he just sent his kid there and to play baseball, and they charge tuition. Like you thought, like, oh, that's got to be sweet getting a full ride to Harvard. Nope, paying tuition.
A $50 billion endowment as of fiscal year 2023.
Just do
wealthiest university in the world. And he called it out. He's like, at this point, you're basically a hedge fund.
So what is that 6%, $3 billion a year, just in interest coming in? Just at 6%, if that's sitting in something safe. Yeah.
So now if you're VMware and you did the math, you're like, at the end of the day, if we can cut all this cost of managing X number of partners, we increase our rate by X, knowing that nobody can really leave us right away. And if you're in contract, here's how long it would take you, right? You could put that together probably in 4 or 5 months and say, yeah, we could turn this and then turn around. Like, yeah, we don't need Carbon Black anymore because we own Symantec. Right. They're dead and you're dead. We don't need two dead horses.
Sure.
We'll take care of the one dead horse we already.
They were hot for a minute. God, it's crazy how many of these are like just got acquired and killed. Brian, I'm not going to lie, man. At the end of the day, this breaks at my absolute heart. This is like the Mount Rush. VMware's Mount Rushmore of like our technical livelihoods, our lives, our like it's been there every step of the way, like with us. This is, you know, this is Mr. Rogers, man. This is Mr. Rogers grew some horns. Like that's what it feels like to me, man.
I never even really paid attention or looked anything up on VMware because it was like you never really had to worry.
No, ever. Nothing. Not ever. But like this is, you know, I think the original founders that sold it to Dell are probably rolling in their graves now. They're not dead, but you know what I'm saying. They're like, oh my God, what did we do? We just, this amazing thing that we built. It gone. Like Dell at least kept it alive, but you know, I understand Dell getting rid of it because why wouldn't they get cash? But yeah, breaks my heart. Brian, I can't thank you enough for your time, man. I hope somebody calls me wrong. Like I said, this is there's a lot of speculation going on here, but the parallels between the Standard Oil thing are kind of crazy. Awesome story though. Appreciate your time, Brian. We're going to wrap things up for episode 483. How do we get there? Crazy. It's been a pretty wild 10 years, man. On behalf of Bob and Randy, do us all a favor. Drink up your drinks, get your phone numbers. You don't got to go home. You just got to get the hell out of here. See you next week. Drive careful. Beat it.